This morning, United States against Sarayan. This is a certified case. The government is the appellant. Counsel for the government, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Efron, may it please the court. I respectfully request to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. This regulation is constitutional for three separate and distinct reasons. First, this court should determine that the regulation only calls for a disclosure that does not implicate the Fifth Amendment, and that does not provide a link in the chain of evidence necessary to prosecute the appellee for a federal crime. Second, under California v. Byers, the civil regulatory exception, the regulation is constitutional. And then finally, under the Medley-Hayward exception, and when we balance the policy reasons in favor of the disclosure called for by the regulation against the mere potential to incriminate, the regulation is constitutional.
Is that the order in which you think your arguments are strongest to weakest, or
it would actually be
all wonderful arguments? What's your view?
Certainly, Your Honor. Our strongest argument, we believe, is that even if this court determines that the Fifth Amendment is implicated and Byers is inapplicable, when you balance the policy reasons supporting this regulation, they far outweigh the mere potential to incriminate that results from the disclosure of a mere arrest.
Is it the government's position? I understand the government's position to be that you concede that it compels disclosure and you concede it's testimonial. All we're talking about here is incrimination.
We concede that it is a disclosure, Your Honor, and the testimony we don't concede, but we don't believe that's a focus of this, where this court should focus. It's certainly not the case. We believe that the focus really is on the third prong, as you stated, whether or not it is incriminating.
So what's your position on testimonial? I mean, are you conceding it or are you not?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, we don't concede that it is testimonial, but again, we don't believe that it's one of our strongest arguments here, and a point upon which this court should focus.
Before you start, would you address the point made in the concurrence below about void for vagueness?
Certainly, Your Honor. If you'll indulge me for a few seconds. First, the regulation was modified in June of 2009, so the vagueness problem that exists in this case will not exist in future cases.
You admit there's a vagueness problem?
I would admit there's an issue, Your Honor. We wouldn't classify it as a problem.
Why not?
Because
it's a punitive reg, isn't it?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Right.
What the regulation calls for is for all personnel to report essentially a felony arrest. While it says would result in punishment of a year or more.
How is he supposed to know that? How is he supposed to know whether the duty to report falls on him or not?
Well, certainly we would ask that generally he should err on the side of caution, certainly. But again, Your Honor, it's not vague because the test for vagueness is simply does it put him on notice of conduct that is prohibited. And here, it's calling for when you are arrested for an offense that could result in felony prosecution.
No, it says would.
Certainly, Your Honor. It says would. And again, we would ask this court to consider first that the regulation has been modified. And now it says.
But that doesn't moot this case, does it?
Certainly not, Your Honor. However, the second point we would ask this court to consider is that it is law of the case. And the opinion below stands for the proposition that no self-reporting requirement can ever exist in military jurisprudence.
Well, it's a punitive reg, and therefore, like a criminal statute, it's got to be construed strictly against the government. So where does that leave you?
Well, certainly the regulation is punitive. We believe there's a host of issues to whether or not that's its primary purpose, and that would take us on to the second.
Well, if it's not punitive, we've got a bigger problem.
No, certainly the regulation itself, a violation of the regulation can be charged under Article 92.3, as was done in this case. But simply the stated purpose of the regulation is to assign responsibilities and roles for all personnel in the Navy in preventing alcohol and drug abuse.
Your real point is that this won't happen again because you've changed the reg.
That's one of them, certainly, Your Honor. And it doesn't, again, the issues before this court, as certified by the JAG.
He certifies a case, not an issue.
Certainly, Your Honor. I don't mean to suggest that this court cannot consider the issue. While it is the law of the case, and it has not been addressed in the brief, certainly this court can consider whatever issues they deem appropriate. However, again, because the lower court's opinion stands for the proposition that virtually all self-reporting requirements are unconstitutional, the government believes that it's essential for this court to reach the underlying merits of the matter.
Thank you.
How do you deal with 1137 as long as we're clearing stuff away before you get to your argument?
Certainly, Your Honor. What 1137 prohibits or calls for is the reporting of an offense. What this regulation calls for is the reporting of an arrest, and there's a fundamental difference. An offense would be I drove intoxicated on January 24th, 2009. It's not, I was arrested for an alcohol-related offense, period. We take great issue with the lower court's misconception that this regulation calls for the disclosure of facts. It really calls for the disclosure of one fact, which is I was arrested for an alcohol-related offense.
That you were at the scene of an arrest for an alcohol event. It places you at the scene of the crime.
Well,
I would agree with that.
It places you at the scene of an accusation, Your Honor. We don't believe an arrest equals a crime.
So you're saying there's a delta between arrest and offense.
Absolutely right.
Which takes 1137 out. And in plain English and in one sentence, the delta is described as what?
I'm sorry?
You can repeat yourself. What's the delta again in plain English? If you were in appellate court and you were describing the delta between an offense and an arrest, what would you write?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. But an offense would be a crime. An offense would be under the UCMJ, I committed, you know, once while, obviously the appellant's not going to say once while alpha or article 92. He's going to say, I was derelict in my duties or I was UA. That's what 1137 calls for. Respectfully, Your Honor, with this
regulation. So the CCA in interpreting the Navy's own regulation got it wrong?
Correct, Your Honor.
Counsel, with respect to 1137, it appears there may be two issues. One is the bearing of 1137 on how to interpret the regulatory reporting requirement and the self-incrimination issues here. The second aspect is that it appears to me that the court below viewed the 1137 issue as a separate and independent ground for its ruling in this case. And that is, it ruled that as a matter of law in the Navy, the naval instruction given by the Chief of Naval Operations is inconsistent with superior authority. Now, it's been the practice of this court, and Chavrinoc, I believe, is the leading case, or most recent case in that area at 49 MJ 334, where we've said that it's the position of our court that we will give significant deference to the rulings of court below in interpreting the service's own regulations. So why should this court now interpret the regulations in a manner different from the lower court when the lower court was interpreting Navy regulations for purposes of governance of the Navy?
Certainly, Your Honor, because the misperception below is that an offense equals facts. That would be the correct perception. What 1137 calls for is the reporting of an offense, which there are certain facts that the appellee did or did not do that cause him to have committed an offense. Whereas what this regulation really calls for is a disclosure of the simple fact of an arrest. And that's where the lower court's foremost problem with interpreting 1137 and really with interpreting this regulation is the fundamental difference between what an arrest is and what an offense is.
Why is the Navy court's view unreasonable? You may have the better view of the manner in which there's a relationship between those two. But here, the Navy court said, in the naval service, this regulation is invalid because it's an inferior regulation.
Well, first, Your Honor, is that the simple plain English of an offense, it's not, an offense equals a crime, whereas an arrest equals an accusation, under plain English or plain meaning of the regulation. To equate an offense with an arrest just doesn't make sense. So in that plain and bare sense, the court below.
So your view is 1137 only requires a point reporting of convictions?
Well, no.
What can you point to in any issuance of the Navy in which a naval authority has interpreted 1137 in that fashion?
No, of course I can, Your Honor, but not convictions in the sense of.
Does 1137 exclude arrests? That is, if a person has been arrested, do they have a pass? They never have to report under 1137, even as it's been interpreted by the Navy Court in Bloom?
I don't believe that it calls for that, Your Honor.
Then if it doesn't, why isn't it a subordinate regulation in this case?
Well, because they're two separate distinct regulations. Again, the reasons for 1137 is to prevent, such as this Court talked about in Medley, was to prevent malfeasance in the military. You see a subordinate who violates the UCMJ and you have a duty to report that. Whereas this regulation has a number of different purposes, such as the prevention of alcohol abuse, the providing persons who abuse alcohol with medical screening, documenting instances of alcohol abuse in their service record. These policy bases are not, they're not the reason the 1137 exists. It's a much different, as this course stated in Medley.
I understand that argument. You still haven't explained to me why arrest is excluded from 1137. I understand your argument why there are different purposes here, but if it's not excluded, why did the Navy Court get it wrong when it said it was a subordinate regulation?
I think I'm not really understanding what you're getting to, Your Honor, because when I say excluded in that, I don't believe that 1137 calls for the reporting of an arrest. I don't believe that it even really delves into one's personal conduct. I mean, 1137 doesn't touch upon what you do. It touches upon what you see other people do.
Well, if 1136, if you as a member of the Navy witness another member of the Navy rape a third party, 1137 imposes a duty to report that.
Certainly.
If you as a member of the Navy witness another member of the Navy rape a third party and be arrested for it, what's the difference?
Well, it's first, because it's somebody else, Your Honor. And
well, it is somebody else. That's the gravamen of what the Navy Court's saying. There's an exception for yourself.
Right, but again, what you saw was a number of facts. You saw facts that meet elements. You saw offense. Now, you don't necessarily know that as a Lance Corporal.
But well, okay, but okay, you're Lance Corporal, and you see somebody driving drunk, or you think he's driving drunk. You weren't in the bar with him. You don't know what he's consumed. But he's weaving back and forth, and he gets stopped by the local authorities. And do you have a duty to report that under 1137?
Well, again, yes, Your Honor, but
yeah, okay.
Because they're facts. Not because you saw an arrest. The arrest is irrelevant, and that's why I apologize for not understanding your question. Whether or not he's arrested doesn't make any difference under 1137.
No, but in either case, you have a duty to report. You have a duty to report.
Right, because
whether it was followed by an arrest or not.
Precisely. Right.
Okay.
Could you explain how you go from, for the purposes of this question only, let's stipulate that the reporting of arrest is contrary to the Fifth Amendment. Only for the purpose of this question.
Sure, sir.
How do you then get to balancing?
Under Medley, this Court stated that if something merely has the potential to incriminate, this Court should then balance the reasons favoring the policy.
I see. So my question defeats your balancing, because you're saying that the key distinction is potential rather than actual.
Well, versus inherently. In Medley, Your Honor, this Court talked about the difference between something that's potentially incriminating.
So it still hinges on your threshold argument, which is it's not incriminating. Because either it is or it isn't. If it is incriminating, as opposed to merely potentially incriminating.
I mean, I certainly see where you're going, Your Honor.
Yeah. Do you get to balancing if it is incriminating?
Not if it's inherently incriminating, Your Honor. That's what both Medley and Hayward stand
for. Let's say it's not inherently incriminating. You argue in your brief, there's various sound military reasons why the military needs to know if someone's been arrested. Why is the Fifth Amendment, in its potential application for the purposes of your argument, the route to deal with that? Why can't the government or the military find out about arrests in other ways?
Well, first, Your Honor, because ordinarily how this regulation might play out is someone were to go on leave in the middle of the country, Minnesota, North Dakota, whatever, and he's stationed at Camp Lejeune. Well, the military can't, every time a Lance Corporal gets back to North Carolina, run an NCIC check on his home state or his police department's in his home state.
Now, a lot of your argument was based on the importance of not letting somebody who is drunk go out on the flight line.
Yes, sir.
Now, if you do this on leave and come back, presumably you're not still drunk.
No, Your Honor, but if you violate DUI laws at home, you're reasonably likely to violate
them.
And
if you're arrested at home, would you be put into the NCIC or not?
You presumably would be, Your Honor.
So why can't the government check the NCIC? Why does it need to put the stress on the Fifth Amendment, presuming it merely puts stress on it, rather than just have someone look up the NCIC every day?
Well, first, Your Honor, because the potential to incriminate is low from arrest. Again, because it's not, the appellee does not have to disclose, I was arrested in Minnesota on January 25th. He merely has to say, I was arrested for an alcohol-related offense, and then stop. So our potential to incriminate is low because the facts, there's only one fact disclosed. But secondly, Your Honor, average Marine Battalion campus unit is 1,000 members in it. It's not feasible for, on a pre- or post-deployment block leave, when 1,000 people go home scattered throughout the country.
Does the Provost Marshal likely review the police blotter for Jacksonville every day?
I would certainly hope so, Your Honor.
Might the Provost Marshal be able to review the NCIC every day or task someone to do so?
Again, we don't believe that's feasible for, you know, every Marine that goes on leave before.
So your real argument is one of administrative convenience.
No, we believe it's a necessity, Your Honor, again, for the reasons set forth in the brief, but additionally, take a manpower issue. You have a sailor who goes on leave, say, a month before the ship's about to deploy, comes back, and then a week before deployment is pulled over by a police officer, and the police officer runs his information and finds out, oh, you have an outstanding warrant, and as I said, Minnesota for DUI. But now he's arrested, sent back to Minnesota, and the boat's about to leave, and all of this could have been prevented if he simply by following his duty and his regulation. It's better off for him because he's not facing an outstanding warrant in Minnesota, but also the military's interest is protected, and the sailor they need to deploy further their mission is on the boat.
Counsel, I have a question. In this case, the incident that he was charged with failing to report, wasn't he also criminally charged for that incident?
He was charged for 111, yes, Your Honor.
So what does that do to your argument that the reporting isn't incriminating?
Well, certainly there could be a potential challenge down the road if someone were to report their arrest and then they were also charged with Article 111. That's what Judge Beal's concurrence below talks about, Your Honor. But here, that would be an as-applied challenge to the statute. Here, he did not report and the government independently discovered the information. So that does not render the regulation unconstitutional in its face.
Counsel, earlier you spoke about the balancing on the policy, and there are many cases out there. Where do you derive the balancing test that you've referred to?
Hayward and Mitley, Your Honor.
And specifically, what language in there tells us to balance, and what is it that we're supposed to balance?
The language, if the disclosure is merely potentially incriminating, we balance the policy reasons favoring disclosure against the potential to incriminate. Call for by in that case statute, but in this case regulation, Your Honor. And
how do you do that?
We would need to take a look at the potential incriminating, Your Honor, which again in this regulation it is low because it only calls for the reporting of an arrest. We balance that against the military's reasons for the statute, which, as talked about in the brief, would be the safety and security of the service members, the manpower issue alluded to, but there are a host of others, such as the leadership aspect of this case, where every weekend or thereabouts, senior leaders are giving alcohol-related safety briefs saying, here are the consequences for alcohol-related misconduct. The Navy has a fundamental interest in ensuring that persons who weren't themselves arrested for DUI aren't giving those safety briefs. In addition, the military has an interest in base driving privileges. There's a duty under this regulation for anyone arrested for an alcohol-related offense, such as DUI or DWI, for their driving privileges to be immediately revoked, Your Honor. That concludes my time. I don't have any further questions.
We have an opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the defense.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Maffei, counsel for appellee. This court should affirm the lower court and find that the instruction compels a statement that violates appellee's right against self-incrimination, and that no exception to the privilege applies. The Supreme Court in Hoffman versus United States held that an incriminating statement is one that would furnish a link in the chain of evidence that could lead to prosecution.
Here, is your position by implication, if not expressly, that the government cannot require someone to report their arrest?
And then charge that individual for the underlying offense. That is not allowed, Your Honor, under the Fifth Amendment, no.
So you could require someone to report their arrest?
You could require.
They got a pass?
From criminal prosecution, yes, Your Honor.
So does that mean you're in a deployed context, you have a Liberty call or a ship call and aid in Yemen, and your crew disappears, and half of them have been arrested, but you can't require them to call in and say, I've been arrested? because that would violate their Fifth Amendment rights. So instead, you have to assume that they've been kidnapped or taken by terrorists.
No, Your Honor, you can have them report an arrest. You just can't prosecute them criminally.
So I've been arrested for murder, but thank you for the pass. Like, get me out of here.
Your Honor, if the goal is to get those people out of the military, they can be administratively separated.
It's one or the other, in your view.
Due to the constraints of the Fifth Amendment, yes, Your Honor.
Does that create an immunity, and does the government then have to demonstrate that the balance of the case is free of the taint of any immunized testimony?
Well, it creates immunity from prosecution in military courts. But to move away from Judge Baker's example, if this occurred in a jurisdiction...
Is it testimonial or...
It is testimonial, yes, Your Honor.
So it's not an immunity from prosecution in military courts, is it?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that question?
If it's testimonial immunity, it's not immunity from prosecution in the court, is it? It's merely immunity against use of the testimony.
Well, and it's the derivative use as well, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I misheard your question. I thought you were referring to...
You'd get back to your evidence chain.
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor. And the reason why is it's reasonable for an appellee to believe that reporting his own arrest would lead to further disclosure of incriminating evidence because... That disclosure would be that first link in the chain of evidence against the appellee.
Now, what has our court said about use of testimony when there hasn't been Article 31 warnings given, when there's a valid administrative purpose for the inquiry?
A valid administrative purpose?
Right, a valid non-criminal purpose for the inquiry. Even if it's used and later used in a criminal sense.
A valid administrative purpose exempts it from exclusion. However, the fact in this case, there is no administrative purpose. The underlying purpose of the portion of the instruction at issue in this case is decidedly punitive. It is to aid in the prosecution of alcohol-related offenses.
Well, surely there's an administrative purpose. You may not view it as the primary purpose, but... You're saying there's no purpose whatsoever on the administrative side, such as making sure drunk people don't go out on the flight line?
That is correct, Your Honor. If the goal was administrative...
It's one or the other in its entirety?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do we have to take that position? There can't be both goals?
Well, the court does not have to take that position, Your Honor. However, let's look at that question for a minute. If the goal of the military was to prevent drunk people from going out on the fly line, they could merely perform a quick check of individuals while they come on the rookie stay to make sure.
They're supposed to breathalyze everybody who walks out on the fly line?
They don't have to breathalyze
people. Let me change it then and say it's military accountability. You always need to know where your people are, so we won't make it a breath. We won't solve it with the breathalyzer mechanism. Why isn't merely keeping accountability of where your people are a legitimate administrative reason for this, whether it's the primary one or not?
Because it only requires the reporting of alcohol-related offenses. If it was accountability, Your Honor, you'd require the reporting of every single offense.
So you and would then, be fine if the requirement was to report all arrests. So the failure here is to draft a regulation that affects everybody's Fifth Amendment rights rather than just DUI people.
Well, the instruction is too narrowly tailored. But again, you can require the reporting of all arrests, but again, not prosecute for that underlying offense, Your Honor. However, moving back to the...
Well, what about the Lucas case? There we had a case in which an individual was on an airplane. The sergeant was concerned that we had a hallucinization situation. He specifically asked him about drugs without giving him any rights warnings at all. And our court said it really didn't matter whether he had, in the end, any thoughts as to whether he'd prosecute him or not. He had immediate need to decide whether the individual on the airplane was on drugs. Now, here we have someone who's got responsibilities on the flight line.
Correct, Your Honor.
And does he have the ability in a court-martial case to mount a facial challenge to the regulation, or is he limited to an as-applied challenge? That is, do we look at this as it applies to someone who's handing out towels in the locker room, or do we look at this regulation as it's applied to someone who's on the flight line?
Well, right now this is no evidence has been introduced at trial. It's a facial challenge. Should evidence be admitted, that could be an as-applied challenge to...
There's no evidence in this case on the motion itself?
beyond the motions, no evidence in the case
well,
in chief.
Well, in terms, again, we're not here deciding whether the individual is guilty or innocent. We're deciding whether the charge can go forward. Don't we apply this as an as-applied challenge with respect to the evidence that was introduced on the motion, as opposed to a facial challenge as to how this regulation may be applied to anybody in the armed forces?
Even under an as-applied challenge, Your Honor.
Okay, well, let's talk about it with a person who is on the flight line. Why is it that the Naval Service can't ask a person who's got flight line safety responsibilities to report any time that they've been arrested, and for administrative purposes to decide whether or not that person will be put out on the flight line, and then, if they so decide, use that information for a non-administrative purpose?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, the Lucas and your flight line hypothetical, the nexus is much closer to the imminent concern, if you will, of the command. That's not what we're dealing with here. Appellee was not on the flight line when this information came forward.
Was he removed from flight line responsibilities under the evidence that was put forth in the case so far as a result of the information he provided about the arrest? What does the record show?
Well, as I understand it, Your Honor, I believe he was removed from flight line duties.
Isn't this a case in which the information collected under the regulation was used for an administrative purpose related to safety? Is that not the record before us?
Possibly, but the evidence also makes clear that it formed the basis of a punitive action.
I understand that. Start with the administrative. Was it used for a valid administrative purpose in this case? Does the defense contest that?
He was removed from the flight line.
Okay,
yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Turning back to the incriminating nature of the statement.
Well, counsel, let's talk about the incriminating nature of the statement. There's the potential incriminating nature of the statement if he had, in fact, reported himself, right? But that didn't happen in this case, did it?
It did not. He did not report. However, the...
So while in theory such a report could be incriminating, in this case, there was no such report.
He did not report. However, the charge of the dereliction of duty is unconstitutional, Your Honor, because he's being charged with the failure to put himself on report, and it is that is incriminating, that potential there, Your Honor.
But if he put himself on report and then they charged him with the underlying offense, then it would be an incriminating statement that was used against him, right?
Yes.
If he didn't report himself, and they didn't charge him with the underlying offense, but only charged him with failing to report himself, then that wouldn't be a problem either, would it?
Well, that's not what we have here, Your Honor. He was...
Right. Now, in this case, we have a case where he didn't incriminate himself, and he was charged with not reporting himself.
Correct.
Right, with not giving the report, and with the underlying offense that they independently discovered.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so the problem, the incriminating statement, is where?
Because that...
In this case.
Yes, that duty to report is unconstitutional, Your Honor, and... Because it did lead to a criminal action against him for that failure to report that Article 111 charge.
What's your answer to the Delta question? Delta question being the distinction, if any, between reporting an offense and reporting an arrest. The government had a shot at that question. Now you get a shot.
Certainly. There is no difference, Your Honor. And for practical purposes, the statement, "I was arrested for drunk driving," is analogous to the statement that a law enforcement officer had probable cause to believe that an offense was committed and that I committed it. And that's how a commanding officer is going to hear that, Your Honor. So there is no difference. It's putting yourself on report for your own misconduct. While the mere fact of an arrest is not admissible at trial, admissibility at trial is not determinative of whether or not a statement is incriminating. And as the Supreme Court said in Albertson versus Subversive Activities Control Board, a reporting requirement that might be used as evidence or at least supply investigatory leads to a criminal prosecution implicates the Fifth Amendment. The government heavily relies on the Medley-Hayward line of cases, Your Honor, and at the outset, we'd just like to make clear that those cases are entirely an opposite to the present case. Medley and Hayward deal with the reporting requirement of the misconduct of others for which the individual is not involved, and that is not what we are dealing with in this case. It is the requirement to report your own misconduct. Now, turning to the second issue, the lower court correctly held that no exception to the privilege applies in this case. In California versus Byers, the Supreme Court developed a three-part regulatory exception test to the privilege against self-incrimination. The regulation at issue in this case clearly fails that first prong, as the lower court noted, because the reporting requirement exists in an area that is permeated with criminal statutes. Driving under the influence of alcohol is widely prohibited. Unlike the hit-and-run reporting requirement at issue in California versus Byers, which the Supreme Court noted was more of an administrative regulatory scheme, it's the reporting and the satisfaction of civil liabilities arriving from automobile accidents, and that is not what we have here. Because it fails that first prong, no regulatory exception applies. The government next argues that a number of issues pertaining to a military readiness exception. Considerations of military readiness do not permit a reporting requirement as contemplated in this case because the portion of issue demonstrates that the primary concern here of the military is the prosecution of alcohol-related offenses. As was touched on earlier, the military could require the reporting of offenses and just not prosecute for the underlying offense if the concern was knowing whether or not service members have been arrested. If the concern, as the government mentions, is...
How does 1137 cut here?
Well, I mean, this reporting requirement conflicts with 1137, Your Honor.
Okay.
As, well, as the lower court noted, and as the military.
Does 1137 require the reporting of arrests?
It...
Not one's own arrest, but... arrests of others, because 1137 by its terms doesn't require the reporting of anything involving oneself.
Right. It requires the reporting of misconduct, and as mentioned earlier, I mean, if...
Well, you equate an arrest to misconduct.
Yes, so...
So it would require member of the Navy A to report the arrest of member of the Navy B by the civil authorities for something.
If observed by...
If observed.
Yes. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Counsel, here's a question I have about Byers. That is, does Byers establish a mandatory test applicable to all cases arising under the Fifth Amendment, or is it a description of the considerations that the Supreme Court applied to that particular case? And before you answer that, the reason I ask that question is that military life is permeated with regulations which have criminal conduct consequences to them. Indeed, there's probably virtually no aspect of military life that is not at least potentially subject to a dereliction of duty charge under Article 92 concerning one's performance of duties. That's highly different from civilian life, in which criminal law is the exception rather than the rule in the relationship between the individual and the state. So my question is, why should we apply Byers in this case in terms of, number one, does Byers establish a generally applicable standard, or is it an analysis particular to that case? And two, assuming it's an analysis particular to that case, why shouldn't we view this as a Supreme Court description of the application of the Fifth Amendment in civilian life, as in many other areas where we would apply a different standard to meet the particular needs of military life?
Taking your question in parts, first of all, Your Honors, analyzing military case law that has applied the Byers test, it would appear to be a mandatory test. And clearly this regulation issue fails the first prong of that test. Game over right there. Assuming the second part of your question, assuming that it is merely only a description, 2 points, Your Honor. First of all, as this court has stated in the past, service members do not lose the protection of the Bill of Rights upon entry into military service. While in the First Amendment context, the freedom of speech has been somewhat proscribed due to the particular nature of military service, the Fifth Amendment has been an area of the law where no necessity or exception has been applied, and it's important. The drafters of the ECMJ were extremely concerned about the inherently coercive environment within the military, which is why we have the protections encoded in Article 31B. So that would actually be an even stronger argument for why a military necessity exception should not apply, Your Honor.
What determines whether it's incriminatory or not? Is it some possibility that would be used against him? Is it a likelihood?
No, it's
what's,
a...
What's the quantum?
It's... Supreme Court has used a wide range of language, but it can be... It's more than a likelihood.
That's the problem.
It's a real and appreciable danger, as one
a
case
A real and appreciable danger. Okay. A commander may be required to investigate an incident, but you can't require him to prefer charges. So where are we?
Because of the of how a commander is going to interpret the statement I was
about to make. It's what interpretation he puts on it, and that goes back to your argument that a commander will see any self-reported arrest as a cop having probable cause to believe that X was drunk.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And again, I would direct Your Honor's attention back to Albertson. It is a reporting requirement that might at least supply investigatory leads to a criminal prosecution in this case, as is what happened in this case, Your Honor.
Okay, but Albertson also turns on a kind of Caroline Products thing. You know, we have a discrete and insular minority there of communists. This is applicable to the Navy at large.
Well,
how much traction does Albertson get?
That's Your Honor's question is in a way addressing the second factor of the bias test, which looks to whether the reporting requirement is aimed at a selective group inherently suspect. At the outset, we'll admit that under the plurality reasoning in Byers, the court found that the reporting requirement under the California Vehicle Code applied to all drivers in California, although it only required the reporting of those involved in auto accidents. Under a straight analysis of Byers, it applies to everyone in the Navy. Only those who are involved in alcohol-related offenses have to report. However, the Supreme Court's analysis in Byers, it conflicts with prior Supreme Court case law, Albertson, Grosso, Marchetti, that dealt with federal laws widely applicable to everyone in the United States, but only required the reporting of specific behaviors such as those engaged in illegal
gambling
or communists or potential communists. So in as those two cases...
Well, now, Albertson was only applicable to communists because you had a discrete minority singled out, and the question was, well, you know, was they had to self-report as communists. Which was upheld by the Supreme Court, by the way.
As I understand, Albertson, Your Honor, the Supreme Court focused on the fact that at the time it was the likelihood of being prosecuted for stating your Communist Party affiliation was criminal, and that was the important issue that court focused on in that case. In conclusion, this court should affirm the lower court because the instruction compels a statement that violates the appellee's right against self-incrimination and that no exception to the privilege applies in this case. Therefore, this court should affirm the decision of the lower court, which upheld the military judge's dismissal of the charge. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Thank you, counsel. Does the government have rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
First, Your Honor, to turn back to this court's question regarding if Navy member A sees Navy member B get arrested, there's no duty under 1137 to report. So to the extent I did not understand that question, unequivocally.
There's no duty, so that if Sailor A is driving down the street and he sees his friend Sailor B, his car is there talking to the police, and he goes over and says, what's happened? And the police says, I'm in the process of arresting this fellow for DUI, that the initial sailor has no duty to report that to his superiors?
No, Your Honor, because he saw an arrest. And now if he sees the guy, as the hypo was before, if he sees the guy driving down the road, his car swerving, then he's seeing somebody drive drunk. That's fundamentally different from merely seeing an arrest. Now, when you get into
so the Navy Court just got it wrong when it read the regulation in that fashion.
We believe yes, they abused their discretion.
And what would you point to in terms of any authoritative guidance from the Department of the Navy, which would say that a sailor who sees that another sailor has been arrested, he has no duty to report it under 1137?
That's really the fundamental question of this case, Your Honor. Is what does an arrest mean? Is an arrest incriminating?
I'm asking you for authority. Is there any, or is this just something that the government has decided to argue in this case here, which is perfectly appropriate? I'm just trying to find out what the authority is on that.
No, I don't have any independent authority.
Okay, thank you.
Certainly.
You're relying on your Delta argument.
Yes, sir. Now, turning back to the question about whether or not this regulation is punitive, its primary purpose is punitive, it's in the 5300 series, which is entitled Manpower Personnel Support. So it's not even the legal series, which would be 5800.
Are you arguing that paragraph is, what about paragraph A?
Certainly there are punitive aspects of the regulation.
Is that primarily punitive, or is that primarily regulatory, paragraph N?
I'm not going to review what that is.
Well, right. That's the paragraph at issue here.
Right. I mean, first, we look at the regulation as a whole, not the five lines that actually gave rise to it.
So then all the government needs to do is do a uniform regulation and then stick in paragraphs saying you have to incriminate yourself. I don't understand that argument.
Well, certainly that this court can look at the broad regulation and determine what its primary purpose is. But if you, for all the reasons certified before or stated before, is that medical reasons, administrative discharge reasons, driving on base, these are not primarily criminal means here.
But just to be clear, it's clearly your view that the regulation as a whole is primarily regulatory.
Certainly, sir.
But is it also the government's view that the particular paragraph at issue is primarily regulatory?
Yes, sir, because of the policy.
Then why are we here?
Well,
he was court-martialed for not complying with it. It's either punitive or it's not.
Well, it's punitive in that, yes, sir, it can be punished under Article 92.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Why don't you tell us your two reasons why it's primarily regulatory rather than punitive, notwithstanding the fact that you can be punished under it?
Well, because, first of all, there's a mandatory medical screening, Your Honor, after someone receives an alcohol-related incident. So there's no criminal aspect to a commander or the general Navy saying, you sailor need to receive medical treatment. Second of all, there's paragraphs in there about security clearances.
No, I'm asking you about this paragraph. This paragraph says you will be held, you are accountable for what you do, and twice it mentions that the UCMJ is sitting on your shoulder.
Right.
What in this paragraph indicates that this paragraph is primarily directed to regulatory matters?
No, sir. Certainly that paragraph, there's nothing in that paragraph that supports the idea that it's regulatory, but the government's position is that you need to read that paragraph.
Okay. I'm not making you concede that, but I was trying to make you decide what this paragraph is about. And you have answered that question.
I apologize, Your Honor.
Counsel, although your time has expired, if you'd like to offer a brief concluding statement, you may do so.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just, again, taking the balancing test on the medley, when you look at the government, the reasons favoring the policies furthered by this regulation, they far outweigh the mere potential to incriminate of an arrest. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 10:20 a.m.